This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here at NAM 2014 in Portsmouth with Dr. Richard Bauer from the University of Durham. Rich has been involved in a really interesting study of a historical document, actually, from a kind of scientific point of view. So, well, I'll let Richard do the talking and maybe you can explain what you've been doing with your team.
I will. So this is a project called The Ordered Universe. It's a much larger project than the one document I talked about. It's going back and looking at various historical scientific works that were written by Robert Grosseteste. And I should say that it's funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. So what we've been looking at is Robert Grosseteste has sort of three phases to his life. So at various times he's been very famous because the latter part of his life he was campaigning for the reform of the church. The previous to that he was a lecturer in theology. And at the beginning of his life he was in some way a lecturer in natural philosophy. So today we call natural philosophy physics. But in 1225, it was kind of the media studies subject of the day, and it was seen very much as a kind of subject you would study on the side before becoming a proper lecturer in a serious thing like medicine or theology. And so during that time, he seems to have lectured this. He summarizes this in various documents. So there are documents on colors, on rainbows, and the one we've been looking at is on light. And although the document is titled On Light, it's really about the origin of the universe. And what's fascinating in this document is the way he thinks is just so much like the way a modern cosmologist would think. So he starts by thinking about the laws of physics around him and coming up with a theory to explain why the table has a solid structure despite being made of point-like atoms. And he concludes that it's the interaction of the atoms and the light that give the table its form. Now, don't get too scared. He doesn't invent quantum mechanics, but it's his way of understanding the Aristotelian philosophy. But what's amazing is he then goes on and takes that idea and tries to use it to understand the creation of the universe. So he starts the universe off at a point as an instantaneous flash of light that spreads out. But because of his assumption that there's this interaction of light and matter, as the light expands, it has to drag matter with it. So the universe initially starts out by expanding. And that's uncannily like the Big Bang, but of course the physics behind it is somewhat different. So the interesting part that we focused on is what happens next, because you begin reading the text and it seems very obscure what happens subsequently. But we think we now understand what it is meaning, and what the fundamental idea is that there's a minimum density but for light and matter. And once the universe reaches this minimum density, it kind of crystallizes and becomes the outer celestial sphere. So that was an idea that comes from Aristotle and the Arabic astronomers, Averroes. So he's really trying to explain how their view of the universe came into creation. And he has this idea that the initial outer sphere then radiates a different sort of light coming in from the outside towards the center of the universe. And as that light comes in, again, it drags matter with it, and it's almost like a snowplow pushing matter ahead of it. And as it pushes matter in, the matter becomes denser and forms a new kind of crystallized matter that then becomes the next celestial sphere. And this process continues on creating the celestial spheres, and at the end, Robert Grosseteste, end of the document, asserts that this process will stall and that there won't be enough light to finally fully crystallize the matter at the center. Sure. And what's left is the Earth, the Aristotelian way of describing the earth is in terms of earth, air, fire, and water.
Sure.
It's these sort of mixed elements that are only partially separated. So the fascinating thing that we've been doing is to take the description in the text and try to turn it into mathematics. And so we have tried to understand what's written in the text and write it down in modern mathematics, and then to solve the mathematical equations. And it turns out that when you do this, what happens in the mathematics is very much what Robert Grosseteste describes, that the mathematics that we've written down describes the production of these shells moving slowly, moving in, creating successive shells towards the Earth. So it's really fascinating that it's not just a story that's described in this document. It actually makes mathematical sense. We don't really understand whether Robert Grosseteste was in some way able to just see what would happen with intuition, or had some mathematical technique, perhaps geometry, that allowed him to understand this. And we've lost the geometric diagrams because those wouldn't have been written down in these documents. So this is all very fascinating.
Yeah,
but the final twist to this is we initially found we couldn't create the Earth, so our cosmos would continue producing perfect celestial spheres all the way into the center. Whereas Robert Grosseteste asserts that this process will stop and leave you with the Earth.
Yeah.
But then we looked again at the text, and we saw that he often talks about the celestial spheres, the inner ones, not being completely perfect. And when we added a sort of opacity to the inner spheres, they dim the light from the outer parts, and you actually get the effect that he describes. The process stops, leaving you with some of the matter concentrated and not completely separated.
Okay.
So it's fascinating that this document makes complete sense,
yeah,
and that the logical processes describing this universe were very much would be recognized by a modern cosmologist.
Yeah.
So, you know, I put up the contentious slide in my talk that Robert Grosseteste was the first cosmologist.
Yeah,
no. So I find this really fascinating that things were so well understood by him.
Definitely. I mean, to put this into context, this is sort of 13th century cosmology. This is before the invention of calculus, before the printing press, if anything. So it's I find it really interesting. So, I mean, presumably either Grosseteste had a really good intuition for the maths, or he had some sort of trick that he had, the calculations that he made that he didn't basically make public or anything at the time, because it seems like it's some quite advanced mathematics. But that was a really, really fascinating thing. And so if I'm correct, you're going to apply this sort of scientific analysis to more of his texts?
This is all part of the Ordered Universe project, so you can go and look it up on the web like that. And we already have a book published on colors that where we've looked at his description of how colors work. And what's fascinating there is he describes colors as being a three-dimensional space. And he describes how you have more or less of each of those dimensions gives you the colors that we observe.
Right.
And the fascinating thing is one of the texts described how you make bright colors by taking away various combinations of the three things. But if you start from darkness, the text only described making the colors by adding two things, which of course doesn't work.
Sure.
But then the people involved in this went back to one of the original oldest manuscripts in a library in Spain and discovered that actually the oldest manuscript described adding the three things, the correct answers. And all the errors were just were a scribal error in the copying.
Right.
And it was really eye-opening to discover that Robert Grosseteste understood this better than the scribes had been able to copy this across.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess at the time this was been quite a common problem, that some complicated document would not be copied quite correctly. So it's fascinating. Currently we're working on rainbows,
okay,
and this again, we have to not judge whether the scientific explanation is correct or not in the modern sense, but what we're trying to understand is what was Robert Grosseteste thinking, and how does his logical argument follow in these documents? Mm-hmm. And again, it's fascinating that he's a top-rate physicist.
Definitely. No, that's definitely one of the most interesting intersections of art and science that I've come across, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy that. Thanks a lot, Richard, for talking to us.
Well, thank you very much.